This is F1 Debrief. You're a lady and I'm a man. Coming up this week, we talk Webber's amazing race, the four remaining tests, and translations into French. So I think now that we have a new champion, or a repeat champion, I should say, this must be our last show of the year. The season is done. It's over.
That's it, is it? You're
Let's
just calling
home.
It quits?
Yeah.
You have no interest in the rest of the season?
Why?
Off-season starts here?
Absolutely.
Are you calling it now?
Yep.
I don't think it quite works like that.
Oh.
People must be relying on us. I do think that interest is going to wane now. So you may be permitted to downscale a little, back off slightly, take your foot off the gas, but you're not taking a holiday just yet.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Jenson Button, who signed a multi-year extension to his contract with McLaren. He says he's very comfortable at the team, and they say they very much like having him. Whitmarsh said, "I can safely say he's one of the most capable and respected drivers we've ever had," which always worries me when they say things like that, because it's quite mean to anyone who's ever driven for them before.
High praise indeed from Mr. Whitmarsh. My question is, why is it a multi-year contract and not a fixed contract, say a three-year contract or a four? Why is no one saying?
Yeah, though, because Jenson spoke to the BBC and they said, how many years is it? And he said, it's more than one and less than 10. What's that about?
Don't understand. There must be a reason for it, but I haven't got to the bottom of it yet.
It's been a bad week for Five Live fans, as Bernie wants to scrap the radio coverage so people can't get free feeds from foreign countries, skip Sky and listen to the radio instead.
I hate him. He cottoned onto the plan too quickly. We did float this idea on Side Podcast. We would install a satellite dish, watch foreign coverage, listen to English coverage. Best of all worlds, wouldn't have to pay for Sky. Byrne is not having any of that. He is now threatening that if fans attempt to do what we're planning to do, or suggesting we might do, he could have Five Live delayed or cut off, and then we wouldn't have any English commentary without paying for Sky. The git.
It's been a good week for Japanese fans, who could buy some excellent merchandise in the shape of weird-looking puppets. There were a few of drivers, Jenson Button included, but the most popular one was Bernie Ecclestone.
I do love Bernie Ecclestone. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that. It was his idea. He decided to have, was it five or six drivers plus himself made into small hand puppets, sold with all money going to charity. Much, much respect to the man.
He did a lot over the weekend. He had champions sign art to be auctioned off. He gave tickets away free to the tsunami victims. He was doing good deeds.
What a guy.
It's been a bad week for those who aren't so keen on the 20 race calendar, as Turkey is a backup to the Bahrain race next year.
No, they got wise.
Yeah, if it should not be able to go ahead, Turkey can stand in.
I was so hanging in there for a 19 race calendar. I don't know how Turkey feels about being sloppy seconds. I'm guessing they're okay with it. They don't want a Formula One race, but they're going to get one if Bahrain doesn't.
I thought that qualifying was okay this weekend. It was more interesting than I expected, particularly because Vettel took pole position and we knew he was dropping out in Q1, which usually means it's going to be a boring session when those two things are already sorted.
So what did you enjoy?
Well, there were lots of other bits to note. Nico Rosberg was the one who dropped out in Q1 with the new teams. I think there was something wrong with his car and they couldn't fix it up in time, so he didn't get to go out at all. And he was only just above Tony Oliuzzi, who also didn't set a time. So for those counting, that's two drivers who haven't set a time and were only one session into qualifying. Remember that.
Okay, am I keeping notes for that?
You should do, because in Q2, a not very well Sergio Perez, he was through to the second session but decided not to set a time, or there was something wrong with his car or whatever. Who cares? That's three drivers.
Three non-runners.
In the top 10, Michael Schumacher, two Renault drivers and Kamui Kobayashi. They were all through into the top 10. They could have had a go. They decided not to. That's seven drivers altogether not setting a time in their relative sessions.
What a bunch of lazy so-and-sos.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Schumacher did try, but there was crazy not managing to cross the line in time stuff going on,
and
which we haven't really seen much of.
Who? Well, we haven't, because normally teams have the data that they require to get their drivers across the line. Who was the driver mixed up in all of this?
You'll never guess.
Someone we rarely speak about, a man who rarely gets his name in the spotlight. Lewis Hamilton, once more under discussion, under Side Podcast discussion.
Yeah. I don't want to discuss it.
Do you? I think we should. Do you understand what happened? Can you see how the entire event unfolded?
Yes. Well, Hamilton was coming up to cross the line as the session drew to a close so that he would have that chance for one final flying lap.
Indeed.
And he was cutting it fine, as they always do. And behind him, there was Michael Schumacher and Mark Webber, both who also wanted to cross the line and start their own laps. And if they stayed behind him, they probably wouldn't have been able to do that.
Lewis was focusing on Lewis's lap, which you would do. I can understand from the guy's point of view how he got into the situation he was in. Jenson Button, his teammate, was in front of him. He needed to make sure that he didn't catch up with Jenson on track. So he wanted to make sure there was a big enough gap for him to get in one final attempt. His attempt that would almost certainly have put him on pole. I mean, he had the fastest car. He was likely the only guy who was going to take it to Vettel. He was concentrating. He was super focused. And he was ensuring that whatever happened, he got across the line at the final moment. Two cars were behind him, and if they'd have waited for that to happen, they would have been backed up and missed out on the lap. So they had to do something. I can see why Webber did what he did. I can see why Schumacher did what he did. And I can see why Lewis did what he did. The problem was, there was a finite amount of time, and there were just too many cars to get across.
Yeah, so Webber went round one side, and Schumacher cut across the grass on the other side, and they didn't end up crossing the line in time to do anything about it.
I think Webber managed to get through, but Michael Schumacher's tyres were obviously gone off by going on the grass. These tyres were useless. And Hamilton, surprised by the two of them, I guess he got zonted. That's what happened. He was, you know, there he was in the middle and two cars surrounded the guy. He was taken aback, and when he went to create a gap to those two, it cost him too much time and couldn't get a flying lap in, which was a shame because Sebastian Vettel put his car on pole. And we were not, from after seeing Friday practice and Saturday morning practice, Red Bull weren't looking to be the fastest car in qualifying.
Well, Button was leading the way in free practice, and it looked like Hamilton had the provisional pole from like the first run of flying laps. And in the end, there was only 9/1000ths of a second between Vettel and Button. So you do wonder what Hamilton could have done.
Indeed. It gave us something to watch in qualifying. That's what I will say. You know, credit to Lewis Hamilton. He contrived to create an event worth discussing during, and it took the spotlight off of the teams that couldn't be bothered to go out there and put in a lap. We have covered this subject in depth in the past, and there's not a lot more we can add. Suffice to say, qualifying isn't the show. The race is the show. That's the most important thing. The tyre rules make the race worth watching. And if that means sacrificing qualifying, then so be it. Just don't watch qualifying. That's the answer. Because if no cars want to run, don't tune in. That then the problem goes away. Just tune in on Sunday when you know the action will be good, because the tyre regulations are framed in such a way that you can almost guarantee a decent race.
But there was one point during the final session in qualifying, actually, like after the first run of laps had been done, and we were waiting to see if anyone would come out. And Martin Brundle sounded completely lost. He didn't think anyone would. He was like, I hope someone comes out. I hope anyone will have an attempt at another flying lap. And it didn't look likely. And I wonder if there isn't going to be a breaking point where, because they can't all stay in the garage.
Then what would
be the point?
Well, because the thing is, it depends on how important the tyres are. When we go to
Korea, they don't have to go out and race either. What would be the point?
Well, no, you do go out and race, because that's when the points are given out, and you don't get any points for qualifying. That's the thing. And if the tyres are degrading so badly, which as they were in Japan, and as they may at the next race, because Pirelli are bringing the super soft tyres to Korea, I think, for the first time, and it's an unusual track for those tyres. You may find that the super softs only have one lap in them, and you know, every single mile and every single lap counts on that rubber. You could get to a situation where nobody runs.
You really think that 10 cars would sit in the garage?
Well, if you were Force India and you noticed that nobody was going out, you might have a go for some headlines. But I can see it coming to the point when there's no point in running, because if you have to start the race on a used set of tyres, and the tyres are that important, if they're that marginal, it's a situation that could unfold.
I don't think that would happen, because, like you said, a Force India would go out and make headlines, and then everyone else would bomb it out there too, and then you have qualifying back again. Like I said, I think there's going to be a breaking point.
Okay, we'll see how it goes. It does remind me of the situation that the three-stage qualifying was supposed to solve, which was 1 hour qualifying. You tended to get a break at the beginning. There was a 20-minute gap before any cars would venture out onto the track, so you were just staring at empty tarmac for a quarter of an hour, maybe more. And we're getting the same now. We're just getting it in reverse. Lots happens in Q1 and it never builds through a crescendo because nothing happens at the end of it.
You know what would solve it?
Go on.
Single lap qualifying.
Unfortunately, you are correct.
The race. So Jenson Button was second on the grid, and as ever, his only goal in life was to get to the front, off the line, overtake everyone, as many people as he could, which meant only Vettel. But he couldn't make it work this weekend.
And he got Schumachered.
That was because Vettel was being defensive.
The mini Schumacher channeled his mental and ran a rival clean off the track.
It wasn't clean off.
Well, it was off the track.
Not completely. A wheel or two.
It was very similar to Michael Schumacher's move on Lewis Hamilton in Monza just, two, three races ago. That it was almost identical, except it was off the line. It was a shoomy chop right from the word go. Nasty. And I cannot believe that the stewards didn't do anything about it.
But they don't do anything about first lap stuff.
But you can't.
They've openly admitted that. It doesn't matter what it is. They don't care.
You can't just go and drive one car off the track, another car off the track. You can't sit in your car and just say, what if you were Liuzzi in the back and you think, right, there's 24 cars in front of me. I could have all of them and just barrel your way down to the front and just smash into every single car. I mean, at what point do the stewards say, that is quite dangerous. Yeah. We will now step in. Because I think the move that Sebastian pulled crossed that line.
What is interesting, though, is... In years gone by, you would have said that the stewards might be manipulating races somewhat. And here, they could have had a hand in extending the championship a little bit further if they'd wanted to. And they investigated it and decided not to. So I guess that says something for the stewarding.
I suppose you are correct. I mean, in the past, they did nothing to Schumacher when he performed his chops. So at least they're consistent, decade on decade. But I don't know what you'd have to do to incur the wrath of the stewards from the start line. Apparently, nothing at all.
I thought this was a bit of a weird race overall because most of the important changes in position came from pit stops, which we haven't seen for a while.
We didn't see too much of DRS overtaking, largely because the way the cars were lined up, the faster cars were always in front of the slower cars, so there wasn't an awful lot of that going on. Pit stops, there were so many. The tyre degradation was such that there were so many stops. That's where the action was. That's where you wanted to be. That's where the race was won and lost. On that point, I should mention, that I forget who it was, there was a ridiculous unsafe release. At one point, a car was released into the path of another, and nothing was said about it. Can you remember which two cars were racing to the pit exit?
Rosberg.
And somebody else. And I forget who was in the wrong, but definitely there was an unsafe release that the stewards also missed. And it was as blatant an unsafe release as you can get.
But you know why that is because all of the TV cameras were looking at Kobayashi the whole time.
Yes, they were. Hold on. I will correct you, though. They weren't always looking at Kobayashi. Sometimes the director mistook him for Perez.
Yeah, that did happen. I mean, I'm all for a little bit of, hey, look, here's our local driver. He's doing quite well. But it was ridiculous. I mean, Kobayashi... He can do interesting things on track. Sometimes he's a good driver. Sometimes he's a crazy driver. But we don't need to see him the whole race.
This time last year, Kobayashi, he drove a stunning race. He was passing people left, right and centre. This year, despite finding himself in his best qualifying position ever, despite not running a lap.
Which actually we should have mentioned in qualifying was weird. They had to go in and fiddle that later because... Four drivers didn't set a time and they didn't know what order to put them in.
What a ridiculous way to score your best ever qualifying position. However, despite being in that fine position at his home race, he had a disaster of a start and then his race turned to nothing. The safety car didn't fall in his favour. He didn't set the world on fire as he normally might have. I would say Kobayashi was the disappointment of the race.
And yet we had to watch him the whole time.
Yes, we did. Him and his teammate. This is the problem when you have local TV directors. Thankfully, Formula One... has got over this by and large. Most races are covered by the same director who knows what he's doing, well, to an extent, knows a little more and is less biased than local directors. In Japan, it seems to be that they insist on having their local director focus on the home hero. And given that Bridgestone aren't in Formula 1 anymore, Honda aren't in Formula 1 anymore, who else have we lost from Japan? Toyota, they're not in Formula 1 anymore. There's not a lot going on in F1 for the Japanese fans to cheer. So, fair enough. Great that you're focusing on him, but I would imagine a large proportion of Japan were at the track. because there were so many fans. I mean, the grandstands were packed morning, noon and night every single day of the weekend. The place was heaving. So who was at home watching this guy on TV anyway?
Kobayashi had a poor start. It's worth mentioning that Weber had an okay start.
No.
How many
places did he lose?
None.
No.
He didn't gain any either, but that's okay. Not the point.
Fair enough.
That would be asking for miracles. He didn't lose any places. It was amazing. I must say,
Come to something. Hold on a second. Well, how have we got to the situation when Mark Webber not losing a place on the start is considered amazing?
Well, I'm going to say, I don't recall seeing him at all the rest of the race. So that was probably the highlight for him.
Having an okay start.
Yeah.
Mr. Average did all right for 5 meters. And then, yeah, that was the end of your interest in his race.
Yeah. We did see the return again of Hamilton versus Massa. This is part three.
I've said this before. I love that these two guys are having to go at each other. I love that Massa just can't find it in himself to let it go. Every single race he's complaining about Lewis. I think more than ever he went over the top with his post-race criticism because the guy's just tapped. And I would guess Lewis probably came off slightly worse out of the two.
Well, there was a piece of Ferrari debris in on the track that brought out the safety car.
True, but I think Massa is could possibly do with taking a step back and looking at what he's saying, because I mean, well, one thing to mention, Lewis Hamilton's excuse after the race was concerning, because he said, I couldn't see what was going on, my mirrors are too wobbly. Now, if that's the case, has that been the problem all season? Because he has had issues with spatial awareness in that car.
Yeah. And
if that is the case, why isn't it a problem for Jensen? Because it's the same car, right? They've got the same mirrors. So is it an eyesight problem? I don't really know. Lewis let on something. Maybe he didn't want to take the blame. Maybe he was looking to blame anything but himself. And he didn't want to blame Massa because, God forbid, the guy isn't prepared to let it go. So maybe he just picked the first inanimate object he could think of. But if that isn't the case, and Formula One drivers have regularly complained that they need larger wing mirrors, but I'm concerned as to why Lewis has suddenly highlighted this problem and why it was such an issue in Suzuka.
There was something of a news item that came out either today or yesterday with Martin Whitmarsh, who is always one to leap to the defence of Lewis, which I suppose is your job as a team principal. But he has said, and I quote, "By comparison to the old school of 20 years ago, they are big, the mirrors that is, but in terms of vibration, probably we don't do enough. If you talk to any driver going along the straight, they're not great. Normally you will see them for picking out colour. There's a piece of colour behind me. That means there's another car. Maybe it's something we have to look at." So suddenly, now,
let's redesign the cars.
Four races from the end of the season, Whitmarsh thinks there's a problem as well.
Yeah. If that's what it takes to stop Lewis Hamilton crashing, let's do it. However, it does seem like a rather extreme solution to what is a very, very narrow problem that is currently affecting just the one person.
We were a bit concerned about that safety car that came out because it seemed very weird.
Weird?
For just one tiny piece of debris.
Define weird. Oh, as in it was like it went all a bit NASCAR. For a brief second, it looked like a competition caution.
I mean, I was sort of looking forward to the marshals running out on track because it's always fun to see marshals running. Now, I don't wish that on anyone. Obviously, it's not nice to have to run around when they're...
What kind of entertainment do you desire, woman?
It's not nice to make them run around amongst cars going at 300 kilometres an hour or whatever. But it did seem a bit over the top.
What, to throw the yellow for that piece of debris?
Safety car.
Yes. Sorry, the safety car, indeed. I was concerned too. The only problem was we didn't see the debris at... We saw the debris at the final chicane, but we didn't see what happened at turn 7, which I think was Webber clouting
Schumacher. Do something else.
Oh yeah, he crashed. That's what he did. It wasn't a huge amount of controversy over that happening. I mean, we've seen Michael Schumacher lose a front wing or two during this season. And this time it was Webber who tapped Michael. And it looked to all intents and purposes as though Webber was the one at fault. And yet, there wasn't the uproar that we've seen with Lewis and Massa. So that's worth a mention.
A bit more grown up about it?
I guess because it doesn't happen every week and because they are more grown up about it. Yeah. We didn't get to see what the debris was like at turn 7. It seemed like it was a convenient time to bunch the field up. And that's a worrying concern. I understand why Formula One fans don't want to go down the route of NASCAR. On the other hand, it did give us a great ending to the race. So maybe there's some merit in it.
Yes, Button had got ahead of Vettel in the pit stops, and also Alonso had got ahead, so Vettel was down to third. And Button was leading nicely. The safety car came out, bunched them all up together. So he had to try and hold his own to the end. And as always, the drivers were coming back at him just as they were going to run out of laps, as they always do.
Jonathan Davey tweeted me after the race and highlighted something that hadn't occurred to me. The safety car played perfectly into Jenson Button's hands, because by the end of the race, the guy was very low on fuel and he couldn't afford to save fuel because Alonso was breathing down his neck. And if it wasn't for the well-timed safety car, it could have been very marginal, him getting to the end of the race. And that you know, that hadn't occurred to me. If it wasn't for that safety car, would Jenson have run out of fuel? Would he have had to go into fuel saving, and may he have lost the race win?
Yeah, or if the safety car hadn't have come out, they wouldn't have all been bunched up like that, and he would have been able to cruise to a victory in his own fashion.
You think he was far enough ahead?
I don't know. There's another way of looking at it.
Interesting. I don't know is the answer. I don't know whether it played to his favour or played against it. However, I liked what it did in the end.
It doesn't really matter either way, because he managed to take the win. So whether it played for him or against him, he overcame those odds and he took his victory in Japan.
Indeed. Can I raise the subject of Bruno Senna?
No.
Why not? I want to talk about Bruno Senna because the guy has done so well coming into this race. Yes, Singapore was bad for Renault, so let's discount Singapore. But Spa and Monza, the guy drove well. And until this race, he had the measure of Petrov. And then come to Suzuka, nothing like the pace that Petrov. Petrov was clearly in the top 10 most of the race.
Petrov was brilliant.
He was doing very well.
He must have been on a different strategy, because Petrov and Perez were on two stops to everyone else's three stops. So was Senna on a three stop as well?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I do know that it worked out much better for Vitaly. And that's a surprise, because I could see the guy sinking into oblivion this season. If Senna jumped in the car and was faster at him at every instance, I could see his career suddenly disappearing from under him.
You're so wrong.
So it was a key drive, I think, from Vitaly. Goodness knows what happened to Senna, but he didn't manage to shine in Suzuka.
Yeah, I mean, there's rumours that the Kubica discussions are taking place this week, so nervous.
It was a timely drive from Vitaly.
Button took the victory, but all the celebrations were to be had at Red Bull, because Sebastian Vettel became a double back-to-back world champion.
Yeah, we predicted that in May or June, July.
It was completely
August.
Unexpected.
I didn't see it coming in the slightest.
And neither did Red Bull, who had t-shirts ready to put on.
And a venue booked for a party later in the day. Yes, it is. We discussed this at the beginning of the show. It's a bit of a shame when the season comes to a climax so early on. You know, we've got another month and a half of racing to go. Not much to look forward to.
I don't know. Or if I have been through a season like this, I don't recall it, because all the seasons I can remember have been quite close, like one or two races from the end.
It's been a while. I mean, I recall Michael Schumacher dominating like this back in 2002, 2003, that period. There were times when, you know, you were bored by summer, or he wrapped up the title at somewhere like Imola. So it has happened in the past, but maybe not since you started watching in such earnest.
No, because I remember if there's one race left, it's sort of like, this is just a fun race and everyone can go out and it's a bit of a free-for-all. And that's exciting, but it can't be a free-for-all for four races.
No, well, Ferrari were running Flovis development paint for the 2012 car during practice in Suzuka.
So is it just four tests coming up?
It's four elongated, expensive test weekends. That's what you're going to see. There are some, down farther in the midfield, you've got Force India and Sauber going after the points, and you've got Lotus keen to keep hold of their position. But beyond that, there's not too much. There's not many spoils left for the taking. It's going to be a long end to this season.
Now let's take a quick look at our rookie reports. We'll start with Paul de Resta and see what Stephen's got for Paul's performance report.
Competent.
For a guy with rookie flu, which seems to be affecting all of the inexperienced F1 personnel in these final flyaway races, I think the guy held himself very well.
How does rookie flu compare to man flu?
Oh, it's rookie flu that's also applying to... It must be worse. It's even worse because it's man flu, but you have to drive a Formula One car. Well.
Well, I don't think Daniel Ricciardo was suffering from the flu, or he didn't mention it if he was. But we do have a word from Davin about how Daniel got on Daniel's day out.
Inconspicuous.
I saw a lot of Liuzzi crossing the grass at speed. I don't remember seeing much from Ricciardo at all. A very quiet weekend. Did you see him in practice? Did you see him in qualifying? I don't remember seeing the man.
That's because all we saw was Kobayashi.
Oh, yeah.
Which I suppose leads us nicely on to the driver of the day.
Not Kobayashi.
No.
Actually.
He'd have to be. He's all that was there.
Bit of a tough one. Sergio Perez put in a strong drive. He finished eighth. You had Nico Rosberg. He started right at the back of the grid. 23rd he started. He finished 10th. That's a strong drive, given that there was only one retirement and one safety car. Michael Schumacher led a lap. Did he lead one lap? He led two laps, didn't he, Michael Schumacher? That's quite a rarity. Last time we saw a Mercedes leading the Grand Prix was in Spa, but I don't remember the last time we saw Michael Schumacher up there. So that was a good drive from him. Jenson Button won the race. Sebastian Vettel, no, that was a terrible drive from Sebastian Vettel, considering the drives he had, by his measure, that was not a good drive. And Fernando Alonso was strong in a Ferrari that wasn't expected to be strong. I don't know who to give driver of the day to. What's in your mind?
I was actually just thinking, no one.
Nobody stands out?
No. It's very disappointing, but I can't pick anyone. I mean, if you were going to really push me, I guess I'd say Jenson Button, because, you know, it was good and he did exactly what he had to do.
It was a controlled drive.
He did everything he could to keep the championship alive. He couldn't control what Vettel did. But no, I don't think I want to give it to anyone.
You're going to abstain?
Yeah.
That's a shock. Is that the first time either of us has abstained this year? Simply because he beat his own teammate at his home Grand Prix, and because he did it whilst he looked and must have felt like death warmed up. I am going to give driver of the day to Sergio Perez. It was the standout drive amongst all of the drives, but it wasn't the best drive of the year, but it certainly was, you know, it was a good showing from the man who was not at all well.
And all that leaves us to do is to rate the race.
And you're going
to
abstain from this one?
No, I can
you're
probably...
You're going to say, I can't decide. I don't know what I'm going to rate it this week.
Get off.
Can I not rate it?
I can come up with a number.
Okay. Tell me what and why then.
While it was on, I thought the race was interesting. There was enough to keep me occupied on my fact bite fact box. And it was good to watch. But then afterwards, I sort of felt a little bit dissatisfied with it. And I didn't really like the... I think it let us down in terms of overtaking compared to the rest of the year.
Hmm.
So
there is a high bar for it to reach, though.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to rate it the same as I did Singapore, actually.
What did you rate that?
5.
5?
Yeah.
That is low. What did I rate Singapore? It must have been more. Was it like 6.5?
Yes.
I'm going to go higher. I'll tell you the thing I like about Suzuka.
Don't tell me it had pretty lights.
No. No, it didn't have pretty lights or fireworks. What it did have was an infectious vibe that travelled across the globe and caught me at my desk.
The fans
at home.
Were amazing.
The media, the tweets coming in from teams and drivers, journalists, the vibe of Suzuka, everything about the atmosphere translated. It came across on the internet. It came across on the television. It inspired me to stay up for hours. My entire sleep patterns were destroyed, because I was just into staying up and enjoying Suzuka, and I didn't want to go to sleep until it was all done, until the day was over. And for that reason, I'm going to give it a very good rating. The race, in terms of cars passing cars and, you know, the championship being over and it's not going to continue, that was disappointing. But just being so happy and enthusiastic and inspired by Formula One, for a long time, I've loved Formula One this year, but I've never, you know, it's been ages since I really felt like, yes, I'm enjoying this. I'm watching some incredibly dull sessions, but I'm still happy. And because of that, I'm going to give it a 7, because the vibe and the experience of Suzuka, the staying up late, the getting up, you know, the watching Formula One in the dark, that's the proper Formula One experience. And Bernie's insistence that the time zones get shuffled to be convenient for Europeans, in some ways taking that away. And it's good that Suzuka is still, we watch it. It's dark in the UK when we watch it. And I love that. And I want more of that. And that's why I'm going to give it a 7.
Feedback. A couple of bits of feedback this week. Firstly, from Jeffrey Schilt. Sorry, I can't pronounce names. He says, on this week's Side Podcast, someone wrote in and asked about where are there good places to see archive footage of F1 races. While I don't have a solution, I wanted to mention that from 2003 through to 2005, Speed Channel aired a show called Formula One Decade, which looked at the F1 season 10 years earlier. Steve Matchett, David Hobbs and Bob Varsher would basically commentate the race and talk about how things have changed between now and then. The races were condensed down to an hour, but it was still a pretty fantastic show, and I was very disappointed when it was cancelled. Apparently, the price for F1 archive footage was raised yet again, but I can't confirm that was the reason.
I can believe it.
Here's hoping someday something like this comes back.
I like that idea a lot. I approve of that, but I can totally understand that the price continues to rise above and beyond inflation. One thing to mention is Bridget, inspired by last week's podcast, went ahead and wrote a guest post bringing more ideas into the pot and discussing this in depth. So we'll put a link in the show notes. If you haven't caught Bridges' post, definitely check that out, because if you're interested in you know, what motorsport could do to reach out to the fans more, Bridge has a whole bunch of ideas.
You can find the show notes at sidepodcast.com, where you can also find a contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about.
Handily placed.
You can also get in touch via email, christine@sidepodcast.com, or via voicemail, 01212887225.
And do get in touch. We must beg now for feedback and questions and ideas for the podcast, because there really is very little to talk about towards the season end. We need you people.
We had a message from Adam who said, I love your podcast and often end up listening to it at work. The only problem is Christine's voice always cuts through the mix much louder than Mr. C's, leaving me with my hand on the volume control or straining to hear Mr. C. Any chance you might boost Mr. C's levels? Keep up the great work. Well, clearly no one needs to hear what you say anyway.
I think that's the way all podcasts should be. The one thing I would mention is my voice is deeper than your voice. As that's the way nature intends it to be. And it might be that the bass response on your headphones aren't up to my deep tones. If you listen on tinny speakers or maybe suboptimal headphones, it might be the case. I think the mix is probably okay using the speakers we're using. And possibly we might be able to tweak it a little bit, but there comes a point when if your sound system isn't quite good enough, he's now going to come back and tell us he spent a fortune on his headphones and our mixing still sucks. But, you know, it's something I'll put out there. If you hadn't considered it, it might be that your headphones just are not ideal for listening to the Side Podcast.
On the flip side, we also had a note from Chip Harp, which...
Chip Harp!
That's the best name ever, surely.
Yes, Chip Harp. I wish I had that name.
Yeah.
Can I have that name?
I can start calling you Chip from now on.
Mr.
If you want.
Chip?
No, not Mr. Chip.
No.
Just Chip. Chip Harp says, just heard your show for the first time. Outstanding. I'll look forward to many more. For once, a podcast you can actually hear instead of muffled comments and blasts of sound. So we are doing something right
now.
So
Chip doesn't want us to change the sound, and Adam does want us to change the sound.
You can't please everyone.
We can try. We'll have a play and we'll have a tweak. I'm not too sure we can do much, given the fact that you're a lady and I'm a man.
Housekeeping.
Last week, we talked about my new book, Between the Lines, which is available on Amazon. It's motorsport fiction. So if you haven't looked at it already, I do recommend checking it out because it's brilliant, clearly.
That's very humble of you to say that. I should mention that it's also now on iTunes. It wasn't available this time last week, but if you're an iBooks user, you prefer to read your text on an iPad, then it's now available in iTunes.
Yes. Also, Amazon launched Kindle France. A French Kindle store where you can also buy it in there. It's not in French. I haven't translated it or anything.
But
I should do that.
If you're gonna translate your book to French. No, you haven't got time.
Okay.
Focus, lady. But if you're in France and you're thinking of buying any of your books, either 365 F1 Stories or Between the Lines, they are now all available in France in euros.
Yeah, Amazon were on something of a mission, launching all these new and exciting things. They've launched new Kindles. There's some kind of tablet coming soon. It's all very exciting. I mean, we actually accidentally bought a bit of a Kindle ourselves, didn't we?
A bit of a Kindle. It's a whole Kindle.
A whole one.
Let's be clear here. You bought a whole Kindle and now you are using it to read ebooks and you love it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was always using Amazon stuff. Amazon apps, but we never actually had a Kindle, but now we do, and it's good for testing and stuff as well. But also,
of course, it's for testing. Yes.
It's mostly good for reading.
Yes, I bought it to test my book in black and white. That's what it is. I love e-ink. I've not seen one before. I think Amy demoed us her Kindle when she came over from Australia last summer. But apart from that, I've not really had a chance to look at it. I love it. If you're a book reader and you're considering moving over from paper to ebooks, take a look at the new Kindles. They are blooming lovely.
They have made some of the options a bit cheaper as well. So if you thought it was always out of your price range, it's probably worth having a look again. Just
indeed.
To see if it fits.
And if you've got a Kindle, get yourself one of Christine's books.
You can find out more about my books at christineblashford.com. And of course, we'll put a link in the show notes. Also, don't forget to buy the F1 Minute app, which is constantly updating with fabulous 60-second news updates from the world of Formula One. That's available in the iTunes app store.
Oh, I was about to say you are becoming a proper salesperson.
Then I
before
got
you
lost.
Muffed the last line. Yes.
It's available somewhere.
It's you can get it places.
Yeah.
That's what you need. It's just stuff. Before we go, I do have to mention another shout out for the F1 show podcast. We talked about them on a previous show this year.
Are we having a flame war with them?
Yes, a lame war.
A lame war.
It's gone so badly that they were doing a live broadcast prior to the Japanese Grand Prix. They did 9 hours of live streaming.
What?
Like their side pod radio.
That's crazy.
And kindly, they allowed me to intrude on their conversation. And we had a live Skype link up to the world.
You've been podcasting without me.
Whilst you were asleep, I had to whisper. It was kind of odd. I was like, hi, is it okay if I talk on your podcast? But it was fun. We talked about Kimi Williams and Barrichello. We talked about IndyCar and NASCAR.
All the things we don't talk about on this
all
one.
All sorts of interesting stuff. I don't know if it was recorded for replay, so you may not be able to find it, which is probably a blessing in disguise, given the fact that I was whispering and mumbling a lot. But I very much enjoyed it. I think they made their 100th podcast. Remember when we did that?
Because we messed up the numbers. So
did we never know when we got to 100?
No.
Well, they can count, unlike us.
Yeah.
So F1 Show made it to their 100th podcast.
Happy
this
100.
Week. Indeed. And do have a listen to that show because it's good and they're lovely guys.
So we should probably wrap this up because, I mean, there is no time to do anything this week because we've just had one race and there's another one, back-to-back racing.
I haven't recovered from the weekend, but I am happy. I'm happy with Formula One. It's been a good weekend. We are drained, but we are looking forward to the next race, even if nobody's going to be watching. Just before we go, one last thing to mention. Of course, this podcast is being recorded on Apple hardware through Apple software. We deliver it to the Apple iTunes store. And a large proportion of the audience downloaded to their Apple products. And Steve Jobs passed away last week. You can't fail to have missed that. But before we go, I do want to raise my can of Red Bull to Steve and say thank you. Because without all of that Apple ecosystem, we couldn't have done any of Side Podcasts. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. And we're still using it to this day. And it makes creation, his inventions have made our creation so much easier and possible. And so we should say, we should raise a can to Steve at the end of the show and say thank you for that. And we will catch you, you lovely listeners, within about 3 or 4 days, I think.